This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
A perverse caliphate. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Bruce Johnson, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Monday, May 16. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The lead official in the fight against Islamic State terrorists says the group is losing territory in Iraq and Syria. But find out what he did not say.
President Obama dedicates his commencement address at Rutgers University to taking swipes at Donald Trump.
The Coast Guard has suspended its search for a mother of four who apparently fell off a cruise ship and into the Gulf of Mexico.
And the donors, who may love Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders a little too much.
Bernie Sanders is famous for his legions of supporters. He's gotten 2.4 million donations. But the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, has flagged thousands of them, actually, for being too excessive. People who have exceeded the $2,700 limit for primary donations.
Russell Berman at The Atlantic on potential elections rules violations that the Sanders campaign has to answer. His report in about 10 minutes. The Obama administration's diplomatic point man in the fight against Islamic State terrorists says the extremists have been losing control over territory. Brett McGurk, presidential envoy to a 66-member anti-ISIS coalition, also claims that thanks to a round-the-clock anti-ISIS propaganda campaign, for every ISIS Twitter handle, there are now six countering that message. ISIS has suffered recent military setbacks, he says, and lost territory in both Iraq and Syria.
They're shutting down access to internet cafes or doing all sorts of things in Iraq, which just shows to us that they're increasingly nervous, and they should be nervous.
But as ISIS terrorists are pushed back along front lines, the group is increasingly turning to insurgency-style attacks to keep pressure on the Iraqi government. Such attacks have left more than 100 dead in the past week, including an assault yesterday on a natural gas plant north of Baghdad that killed at least 14 people. And while ISIS is losing ground in Iraq and Syria, its global affiliates appear to have grown in strength in countries like Libya. President Obama urged the graduating class at Rutgers University to stand up to those who want to confront a rapidly changing world by building walls around the U.S. or by embracing ignorance. His commencement address yesterday was largely dedicated to taking shots at Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Mr. Obama told the roughly 12,000 graduating students at the school's 250th anniversary in New Jersey that the world's toughest challenges cannot be solved in isolation.
The world is more interconnected than ever before, and it's becoming more connected every day. Building walls won't change that.
Repeatedly, Mr. Obama referred to disparaging comments about Muslims and immigrants and opposition to free trade deals. This was the second of three commencement speeches that Mr. Obama will deliver during his final graduation season as president. Earlier this month, you may remember, he spoke at Howard University in Washington, D.C. On June 2nd, he'll be at the Air Force Academy in Colorado. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is trying to snap a losing streak against rival Bernie Sanders. To do that, she's making a final push in Kentucky. Before tomorrow's primary, the former Secretary of State is scheduled to have appeared at 11 events over three trips, including visits to a pair of churches yesterday morning.
I want to do everything I can to make sure we keep auto jobs here, and I'll tell you what. There is a big difference in this primary campaign between me and my opponent, Bernie Sanders. I voted to bail out the auto industry, and he voted against it.
Mrs. Clinton is also being forced to spend money on TV ads in Kentucky. Mr. Sanders, the senator from Vermont, also campaigned this weekend in Kentucky, hoping to build on back-to-back victories. Meanwhile, Oregon also votes tomorrow, and Mr. Sanders is favored there. Now, a two-state defeat might not really ding Mrs. Clinton's delegate advantage, but the Wall Street Journal says it would be embarrassing and further proof that a significant number of Democrats are not satisfied with her as the nominee. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal. Glad you're with us. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has become known for the millions of diehard supporters who have flooded his campaign, right, with small donor contributions. Yet many of those fans, it turns out, have become a little too supportive. Russell Berman at The Atlantic says for months, the Federal Election Commission has been writing to the Sanders campaign with warnings that hundreds of his donors have exceeded the $2,700 contribution limit, including a warning as recently as last week. Russell, what's going on here?
Well, so, you know, Bernie Sanders is famous for his legions of supporters. He's gotten 2.4 million donations. But the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, has flagged thousands of them, actually, for being too excessive, people who have exceeded the $2,700 limit for primary donations. Many of these people donated, you know, a number of times, and they went over the limit. And so they've told the Sanders campaign to go back and look at it and give out refunds if they need.
All right, so Senator Sanders is not the only one that this happens to, right?
No, this is fairly common, but and it happens to the campaigns that have, you know, are relying on these small donors. But Sanders, the number of people who've been flagged is pretty unprecedented. The last list that the FEC sent to the campaign stretched for 639 pages, covering more than 1,000 people.
That's got to be almost an impossible paperwork load for a campaign of Senator Sanders' size, no?
Right. You know, to a certain extent, they've been a victim of their own success because they're relying on these small donors, and it's just they've been overwhelmed by the flood of donations, and so they don't have the infrastructure to track it all. And, you know, it kind of raises the issue of how the campaign finance system is set up really for the traditional big money campaigns like the Clinton campaign, where you have professional fundraisers and bundlers who know the rules, who are asking their donors not to give $27, but to give the maximum in one check, $2,700, or maybe a couple checks of $1,000. And it's a lot easier to keep track of fewer, you know, donations of larger amounts than it is to keep track of 2.4 million donations with the average, famously, as Sanders has said, of $27.
We're speaking with Russell Berman, senior associate editor at The Atlantic. His piece is called "The Donors Who Love Bernie Sanders a Little Too Much." Did you say he's getting some foreign donations too? That's also a no-no, right?
Right. So the FEC flagged not only excessive donations, but donations where the address was from outside the United States. And so what the Sanders campaign now has to do, and they've already been doing it because the FEC has sent them a number of letters on a monthly basis, is to go back and go to these people and verify that they are U.S. citizens or legal, you know, permanent residents of the United States.
Wow.
And so that's another, you know, bureaucratic nightmare for them as well.
Now, they're not returning enough money where it would actually ding the campaign, are they?
Right. This, you know, the amount of money that is excessive amounts to, you know, maybe a couple of million dollars out of more than $200 million that the campaign has raised. So this won't have, you know, an impact on the election, certainly.
All right. It does seem like there's maybe a little bit of let's ask forgiveness rather than permission when it comes to donations.
Right. You know, as a couple campaign finance experts told me, that the campaign is already, they're always conditioned to say, I'm sorry, and give the money back rather than to put up more hurdles to somebody giving them money in the first place.
Mm. What kind of trouble could he get in if this were to escalate?
So this is just the beginning of a process, and the letters contain fairly standard warnings that he could face fines or other enforcement actions if he doesn't respond to the FEC and to refund the excessive or illegal donations within a specified amount of time. so far, the Sanders campaign, it seems like they've been on top of it. They've already filed a couple of amended reports with the FTC, basically saying we've given refunds to these people, and we are going to continue to do so. So it doesn't look like they're going to face, at this point, stiff fines. But, of course, given the way that the FTC works, any fines would probably come down long after the election is over.
Right. Wow. All right. So as you point out, too, when you go to Senator Sanders' campaign website, ordinary donors, folks who are contributing the average of $27, would have no way of knowing that there's some sort of limit or that they might be approaching it, right?
Right. You know, as I said, you know, to a certain extent, it's a system issue. But the Sanders campaign is not without fault here. They, you know, you go onto the website, they could easily tell people that you cannot donate more than $2,700, or given the sophisticated tracking technology that all these campaigns use, you know, certainly they could set up software to flag when somebody who's given, let's say, 10 donations of $100 or $200 has gone over the limit.
Thanks, Russell. Russell Berman at The Atlantic. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Bruce Johnson is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, good morning. The Obama administration's diplomatic point man in the fight against the Islamic State says the tide is turning against the extremists. Brett McCurk says ISIS has been losing control over territory and its caliphate is shrinking.
We're finding the leaders, we're killing the leaders, and that's going to continue.
Verizon and union officials representing about 40,000 striking landline and cable workers up and down the East Coast have agreed to restart negotiations tomorrow. U.S. Labor Secretary Thomas Perez says he met with both sides yesterday in Washington. Workers in nine eastern states and Washington, D.C. walked off the job in mid-April. They have been working without a contract since August. Tomorrow is presidential primary day in Kentucky, where Democrats Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders spend time over the weekend. Clinton, with a big lead in delegates, is trying to deliver a knockout punch and referenced Bill Clinton and Barack Obama while campaigning in Louisville.
Yeah, I know the last two Democratic presidents pretty well. I'm not running for either one of their third terms, by the way. I'm running for my first term, but I do think it's important to learn about what works.
Oregon also holds a primary tomorrow. A California neighborhood overtaken by a swarm of aggressive bees suspected of killing two dogs is considerably safer after the insects didn't make it back to their cluster. That according to a bee expert. Concord resident Maria Piat-Ravit says the bees surrounded her when she tried to leave her house.
They were super aggressive. They were literally like following us and going after us and banging on the windows. It was freaky. It was like a horror movie.
The frenzy began when an amateur beekeeper got rid of a hive after being attacked by what appeared to be Africanized bees. And Gordon, how long have you hosted this show?
Bruce, it has been a breathtaking and shocking and startling 10 and a half years.
Well, you are slightly behind Morley Safer, who had been on 60 Minutes for 46 years, the longest news tenure in primetime history. And CBS aired a tribute to the newsman last night after he announced his retirement a week ago. Overall, the 84-year-old Morley Safer had a 61-year career.
It's amazing. Just amazing.
Start working harder.
Yeah, and longer.
And longer.
Oh, my goodness. 22 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you're looking to take your business to the top, turn to the state that's doing the same, Michigan. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org. Walmart is suing Visa, saying Visa's policy of allowing signatures leads to fraud. The retail giant wants the credit card company to require shoppers like us using chip-enabled debit cards to punch in a PIN code instead. Without it, Walmart says there's a risk to our bank accounts. Meanwhile, retailers who didn't make the transition to chip cards as of last fall are now on the hook for counterfeit transactions. And Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel says the cost of the fraud, known in the industry as chargebacks, are starting to add up. Robin, set the scene.
Basically, whenever there were counterfeit card transactions in the past, the bank that issued the card would be responsible for eating the cost of the fraud. And now, as of last October, that liability has shifted to merchants. So if you're a merchant and you do not have the proper equipment to accept chip cards, then you're going to be on the hook for counterfeit fraud. And what's really interesting is that a lot of time in the past, the merchants didn't even know that they had counterfeit fraud, and now they're finding out loud and clear.
Wow. All right. So why would some companies not be on board at this point?
A bunch of reasons. I mean, I think, first of all, there are many merchants who didn't know that they had such counterfeit fraud, so they didn't find that installing the chip card equipment was particularly important for them. Some have waited, even though they had, you know, a good deal of warning about it, some waited, and now there's kind of delays in either getting the equipment or getting it certified, installing it, getting the right software. So there have been a lot of delays, and this is really affecting large merchants and small merchants, because there are plenty of large, big-name merchants who still are not accepting chip cards.
We're speaking with Robin Seidel, credit card reporter at The Wall Street Journal. She's got a story entitled, More Chip Card Headaches, This Time for Merchants. All right, so what else is going on here? What else can we mention?
Well, one of the other things is, obviously, people have been talking a lot about the speed or lack thereof in these chip card transactions. And I wrote a story a couple of weeks ago. Visa has introduced some new technology to try and speed up the transaction time. And that's another thing that merchants have blamed on the reason that they're not installing this equipment. They say it's, you know, too complicated, too lengthy for their customers. A lot of them didn't want to install it during the holiday season last year. So, you know, there have just been delays all around. And, you know, I hear anecdotally from so many cardholders all the time about how long it takes. And it's really uneven depending on the merchant that you go to for some reason.
Wow. So inserting the card itself into the device takes longer? Is that what they're saying? It takes longer to process or verify?
Well, just think about it. When you swipe, it's just instantaneous. You swipe really quickly and you stick that card back in your wallet. With the chip card, some of it is real extra processing time and some of it just is perception. But you keep that card, you have to keep that card in the slot. So you're standing there waiting for the transaction to finish, and, you know, if you've got a bunch of things that need to be bagged or something, you can, you know, entertain yourself and spend that time. But if you've got one thing and you're just waiting, it seems like, in some places, it seems like it's taking forever.
Thanks, Robin. Wall Street Journal reporter Robin Seidel. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's to the innovators and job creators. Dell is proud to support small businesses everywhere with reliable, award-winning technology powered by Intel Core processors, created to give your business 4 times faster performance and cut downtime by 50%. During Small Business Month, enjoy 35% off select business PCs, plus always get free shipping and advice from Dell's dedicated experts. Visit Dell.com/radio to discover how we can help you do your best work. Intel inside, powerful solution outside.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, May 16. Gordon Deal with Bruce Johnson, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. An Obama official says ISIS is losing ground. The Wall Street Journal says Amazon.com is set to roll out new lines of private label brands, including for perishable foods. So watch for names like Happy Belly and Wickedly Prime. Red Hot Chili Pepper singer Anthony Kiedis is in the hospital. And a man hit by a car on a golf course has returned to finish his round 7 months later. That story in about 20 minutes. As the general election nears and the Trump campaign works to unify a fractured Republican Party, expect more GOP lawmakers on Capitol Hill to lend their half-hearted support to the presumptive nominee. But Gabby Morangello at the Washington Examiner says there are 3 types of support the New York businessman is likely to get. Gabby, what are we seeing?
Right. Well, it's since Donald Trump was declared the presumptive Republican nominee by the Republican National Committee, we have seen a number of Republican lawmakers come out and offer pretty half-hearted endorsements of him. And it's interesting to take a look at the language that they use when they're endorsing him. You've seen somebody like New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte, who faces one of the most contested Senate re-election contests in the country, say that she endorses Donald Trump, but she refuses to associate herself with him in any way beyond that. So it's just a really interesting trend to see the language and the iterations of these reluctant Trump supporters and kind of how they're spinning their support in a way that's cautious ahead of November.
Interesting. So you mentioned Ayotte, you know, New England, New Hampshire. Is there a specific issue, for example, for those two members of Congress that I don't know, that make them hesitant regarding Mr. Trump?
I think that Ayotte's leading concern with Donald Trump is his proposal to implement a total and complete ban on allowing non-American Muslims to enter the U.S. But there is a slew of Republican lawmakers who have taken issue with the comments that Donald Trump has made, the policies that he's put forth. And then there are others, and this is the third category that I read about, of Republican lawmakers who have kind of come to this crossroads where they're left to decide who they think is the lesser of two evils, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and they've stuck to their party and said, you know, I might not agree with him on every issue or any issue for that matter, but Donald Trump is the at the top of my party's presidential ticket, and I'll support him because of that.
We're speaking with Gabby Morangelo, political reporter at The Washington Examiner. Her piece is called The Three Kinds of Reluctant Trump Supporters. This is unusual, I guess, at this point of the primary slash campaign.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, if we go back to 2012, it's hard to recall the same number of Republicans, and prominent Republicans for that matter, either saying that they support him, but he has to do this, this, and this to earn their endorsement, offering these lukewarm endorsements of the Republican nominee, or, you know, seeing as many Republicans as we have now refusing to attend the GOP convention in July or vote for their party's nominee. I mean, it's really difficult to think that this is happening when you look back on 2012. And at least to my knowledge, I don't recall seeing, you know, dozens of Republican lawmakers refusing to support Mitt Romney as the Republican nominee.
Yeah.
So it really goes to illustrate how fractured the party is right now.
All right. How damaging could that be down ballot come general election day?
Well, there's been a lot of concerns among Republican lawmakers, especially those in the Senate who face particularly contested contests to maintain their Senate seat, in terms of, you know, having to answer to some of the policies that Donald Trump has put forward. I did a piece a while ago about House Republicans saying that, you know, they've heard from friends of theirs who are in districts where Donald Trump is not so popular, that they're really concerned that they're going to lose their seat in the House. Because when they go back to their district to campaign, they're going to have voters who ask them questions about the policies that Donald Trump has put forward, and they're going to have to answer to them one way or another. It's definitely going to have an impact on down-ballot races. To what extent remains to be determined, but we can pretty much assume that Donald Trump is going to be a topic of conversation when these lawmakers return to their states and to their districts to campaign.
And to be clear, no Republican lawmaker who still, say, hasn't gotten behind Trump has said instead that they might support Hillary Clinton, right?
No, not to my knowledge. I have not seen that, but it's pretty interesting to see, you know, people like Jeb Bush and others in the Bush family say that they not only are they refusing to attend the convention, but they're not going to vote for Trump or Clinton in the election. I mean, that's a big deal to have a dynasty like the Bush dynasty refusing to support the Republican presidential nominee.
Thanks, Gabby. Gabby Morangelo at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co /GordonDeal.
You don't have to be a retail giant or government agency to be the victim of a costly data breach. If you run a website and collect customer data, your small to mid-sized business is just as likely to be targeted by hackers. The Barracuda Web Application Firewall provides cost-effective instant security against automated and targeted attacks, making this WAF a must-have for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Web App Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/WAF.
It's been all kinds of Monday, hasn't it?
Don't come at me with your it's Tuesday Eve stuff trying to stretch that nonsense.
There's no sugarcoating it.
No, this is not Sunday extended. No, this is nothing like that. This is not Sunday plus or no. No, it's just...
Yeah.
It's Monday.
We're just going to have to deal with it.
I know.
Just have to grin and bear it.
Grab those bootstraps. Suck it up, buttercup. Here we go. Beyond the headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you've ever watched a TV newscast and they flash that email address across the bottom of the screen asking for viewer feedback and you've thought to yourself, I wonder if anybody would really read an email that I send to a TV station. The answer is apparently a resounding yes. A TV meteorologist in Los Angeles was forced to cover up with a sweater while on the air because of email complaints by viewers who thought that her dress was inappropriate for delivering the weather at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Social media has been buzzing over the incident where Liberté Chen of KTLA was busy delivering the day's forecast when an unidentified person hands her a sweater to cover up her black beaded dress. Jeez. Chen asks why, and someone off-camera responds, "We've gotten a lot of emails." Chen seems confused but reluctantly covers up and continues the forecast, but not before remarking that she now looked like a librarian. Chen tweeted before the broadcast that she originally had a different dress picked out, but changed it because she thought it would blend in with the green screen that she stands in front of. A legitimate concern because earlier this year, a clip of her went viral after that exact thing happened, where she literally disappeared into the weather map because of a bad choice of outfit. This was back in February this happened.
I think I remember a picture of that.
And someone actually had to come rescue her, again, I think with a sweater. Someone actually came in and actually put the sweater on her just so you could see her, because otherwise she had disappeared. Right into the screen.
It's just her face bouncing around the
basically
screen, right?
So the dress was not, I'll be honest, the dress was not that revealing, but it was kind of a cocktail style dress,
so it was
a black beaded kind of cocktail.
It looked like
something you'd wear out to a party at night. It was not especially revealing necessarily, but I guess people thought, in the morning, that's just not a morning looking dress.
Interesting, because this was Los Angeles.
Yes.
I thought this stuff was encouraged.
Exactly.
Huh.
This is a place where they're generally not shy about such things.
How about, is it possible she came straight from a cocktail party the night before and just...
Maybe
because,
that's what people thought.
Because of her commitment to work...
Right.
She came straight to work from the party.
Right.
I don't know.
That's what people probably thought. But again, before the broadcast even happened, she tweeted about her dress. She said, "Look, I was going to wear this one, but it was going to blend in the screen, so I had to change into a different one at the last minute." So she put some thought into it, but apparently the viewers were not so fond of it.
And that's something, right, is pretty much exclusive to females on TV.
Yes.
There's nothing, you may wear an ugly tie, I guess, but men generally don't get criticized for what they wear on TV.
And there's been some talk of sexism because of that. There's a lot of this is sexist directed towards her.
Yep.
So we'll see how this one plays out.
Again, Los Angeles, very surprising.
Yes. And you and I, Gordon, have shaken our heads in the past at the bizarre prices people are willing to pay for locks of hair from famous people. We had another entry into the sweepstakes over the weekend when a lock from Thomas Jefferson sold at auction in Texas for over $6,800, nearly 190 years after the former president died. Heritage Auctions in Dallas said Saturday's sale involved 14 strands that were snipped by Jefferson's personal physician at the time of the statesman's death on July 4th, 1826. The documentation includes a letter confirming the lock as part of a limited number of Jefferson's hair samples known to exist. The buyer, as you might expect, wishes to remain anonymous.
Yeah, good.
You're the guy who paid $7,000 for 14 strands of hair.
So is that a trivia question of some kind? How many strands of hair make a lock?
I've wondered that myself, because that doesn't 14 strands of hair is not a lot.
No.
If you have 14 strands of hair in your fingers,
right,
in your fingertips, that's not a lot. It doesn't feel like a lock to me, but I'm not an expert in hair for sale.
So if you were to display this in a Ziploc bag and you hang it, you got to explain it. That's the whole thing.
We've talked about this before, because I guess it was one of the Beatles? Was John Lennon, I think, or one of the Beatles who had the, we talked about this recently, about sold a lock of their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, when, you know, this opens up a whole bag of questions, you know, people snipping people's hair before they die and mm-hmm. then saving it and putting it on sale. But we wonder, how would you display something yeah. like that? And what are you going to tell people when they walk into your house and there's something up on your lock of hair up on your wall?
Yeah. You just like that story. Yeah, it's Thomas Jefferson's lock of hair. Yeah. Sure it is, buddy. Sure it is. 12 minutes now in front of the hour.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Glad you're with us. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Bruce Johnson is back with more of America's First News.
Smoking could become a lot more expensive in California after November. A well-financed campaign whose backers include billionaire environmentalist Tom Steyer, medical groups, and organized labor says it has collected enough signatures for a ballot measure to raise California's cigarette tax by $2 per pack. President Obama used his commencement speech at Rutgers University to slam Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's positions on immigration, trade, and Muslims. Trump told the gathering in New Jersey that in politics and in life, ignorance is not a virtue.
The rejection of facts, the rejection of reason and science, that is the path to decline.
Meanwhile, organizers say Nevada's Democratic convention turned unruly and unpredictable over the weekend. Bernie Sanders supporters accused state party leaders of putting them at a disadvantage on rules, votes, and disqualifying 58 would-be Sanders delegates. Security told some Bernie backers to leave after they threw chairs. The probe continues into the bus crash that killed 8 people and injured 44 others in South Texas. The OGA Charters bus rolled over Saturday morning. Corinne Stern is the chief medical examiner in Webb County.
We have seen some multiple fatalities, but as far as a commercial transportation, this is probably the worst one I've seen in 10 years here.
In Illinois, a week-long manhunt for a suspect who wounded a police officer has ended in a shootout more than 200 miles south that wounded an FBI agent and left the suspect dead. Police say yesterday's shootout in Eddyville near the Kentucky border led to the death of Darcy Clint Pendleton. And the police chief in Augusta, Kansas, is calling it a knucklehead situation. A man attending a high school graduation ceremony yesterday was adjusting his sock when the gun he had stuffed in his sock accidentally went off. The bullet went through the man's foot and traveled another 50 feet before striking a woman in her calf. Neither injury is life-threatening.
Is that official police terminology, by the way?
It is.
All units beware. All units beware. Knucklehead situation. Knucklehead situation.
Right? They had a seminar for that.
Oh, man.
And by the way, the commencement speaker went on to warn all graduates not to stuff guns in their socks, particularly at a public event.
Very good. Good takeaway advice there. Very
words
good.
To live by.
Speaking of commencement addresses, see Tom Brokaw? No fan of the University of Alabama, apparently. He's speaking at Ole Miss over the weekend
mm-hmm.
and said, if I were at Alabama, I'd have to use smaller words and sentences.
Wow.
Oh, man.
It's a way to endear yourself.
Wow. No invite coming from there anytime soon.
Nope.
6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal.
Glad you're with us. A North Carolina man back in the swing. Finished a round of golf recently that was put on hold for 7 months after he was struck by a car. The Fox TV affiliate in Greensboro says 61-year-old Kevin Reinert, a retired Air Force colonel, returned to the 18th hole at the Starmount Country Club in Greensboro for the first time since hit by a vehicle back in October by a guy in the middle of a crime spree. Suffered severe ankle injuries, broken thigh bone, broke both kneecaps, needed several months of recovery. While not fully healed, he decided for kind of a symbolic gesture to get back on the course. A lot of friends and family joined him for the 18th hole. He told Fox 8 that he's had better scores on a golf course, but never a better time on a golf course. Good for him. That'll do it for this hour. For Bruce Johnson, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. There's a lot of talk today on retirement, how to save, and how to reach our goals. Well, now, thanks to Betterment, there's a new way that's changed the industry by making investing easier and at a lower cost. Betterment is the largest independent automated investing service, managing more than $4 billion for over 150,000 customers. The financial services industry has embraced technology and innovation through the creation of automated investing, meaning you keep more of your money with fees that are a fraction of what you pay with traditional financial services. Then the excess cash is automatically invested, so every dollar you invest is put to work. Your portfolio is automatically rebalanced. Betterment is a member of SIPC, which means your investments are protected. Bank-level security means your personal data is too. Betterment is the better way to secure your financial future. Make sure that you and your family are set up for success. Right now, get up to 6 months of no fees. Learn how when you go to betterment.com/deal. That's betterment.com/deal. Betterment, investing made better.